Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say. And it's an open line today, so it is really your chance to have to say whatever's on your mind. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio@manxradio.com. Oh, and before we go any further, by the way, tomorrow there's a by-election taking place for residents in Lonnon to choose two new commissioners. So we wish them well. We wish the candidates all well. You may be able to vote tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. at the Laxey Working Men's Institute or Baldrine Methodist Church Hall for the commissioners. And your first step on the ladder. Teresa Cope and now Wendy Reid, standing now from Manxcare, suggest to me that they know which way the wind is blowing. The UK is progressing a bill to replace NHS England back under DHSC control there. They're also developing a 10-year NHS transformation plan. There must be a realisation that the costly Jonathan Michaels experiment is finished. That's Texter 313. Apparently, this is Sue who's saying, I've heard from a fairly reliable source. So we'll put this under the heading skeet. I've heard that teacher numbers are being cut due to falling birth rates. It seems to be a stupid move when more people are being encouraged to come here and live here. And what about the big promises to support neurodivergent children? I already know of someone who's already lost their support because of this. That's Sue. Well, thank you, Sue. Good to hear from you. And a good example of why the current system doesn't work. This is, you may have heard on the breakfast show this morning, they were talking to Daphne Kane about whether or not we can actually quantify what benefits come from financially supporting students in the UK. The education minister says she's hopeful that higher education options will become more accessible to people on the Isle of Man. Some MHKs have questioned whether government should be keeping tabs on how taxpayers-backed financial support is used and what benefits it brings to the Isle of Man. And Heather says, I've got a good example of why the current system doesn't work. I'm a qualified teacher studying to further my skills to fill a critical gap in Ireland provision. But because I already hold a postgraduate qualification, my PGCE, Postgraduate Certificate of Education, I'm not eligible for any government support, despite the qualification I'm studying for being desperately needed. Sounds like a case of left hand and right hand, doesn't it? Heather on 004. Thank you, Heather. And Andrew's with us now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there, Andy. Very quickly, please, I can't find the story that was produced elsewhere, because I haven't seen it on your website, but it has been produced elsewhere, about 4 million odd that was moved from the DHSC to top up Manx Care after the budget amount had been put forward to Tynwald and had been approved by Tynwald. And instead of including this extra 4 million odd as a request to Tynwald to be approved, it wasn't. And my understanding from what I read, but I can't put my finger on it, is that this money, it was questioned in the Public Accounts Committee meeting last week, and this money was just moved sideways to top up Manx Care. And who approved it? Apparently, I'm pretty sure I read that it was just moved by somebody. And I think the person's name was mentioned in the Public Accounts Committee records. But it's just shades, isn't it, of the horse trams and something being de-scoped, and we'll use that money for something else, which hadn't been... Where did that go before, Tindall? It didn't. And this is what's happened again.
Well, as you say, the health chiefs have been... It's £4.3 million transferred to Manx Care without Tindall's approval. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. So, I mean, this is, as I said, this is just shades of the horse trams. Money being used that was voted for being used elsewhere without scrutiny. But now it's come out in the Public Accounts Committee. So these sort of transactions should just not be happening without approval.
Interesting. Well, it'd be nice to know, as you say, that it was last year as well.
Correct. And then also the other item on my mind was that aspect of the accounts not having been done on time, which Mr. Randall agreed was illegal, and for doing it illegally there's a fine of £5,000, and this happens on numerous occasions. I mean, that's almost analogous to the issue of the parking tickets. Why issue them if you're not going to collect them?
Well,
I have a law that says there's a penalty of £5,000 if you break this law, and then nothing happens. Somebody, there's some accountability has to be written back into this, that apparently he didn't give any directions. Well, somebody has to give a direction to him. You have to do this, and then he has to give a direction. This has to be done. And if it isn't done, then there's some scrutiny and some penalty. It's competency. You're not competent to do the job if you haven't done it on time.
Well, I mean, at the very least, it just sounds strange. It sounds disjointed, Andrew.
It does. But I mean, what's the point of having these rules if they don't follow them?
Oh, that's a very good point. That's a very good question, yes. And right, I think there's no answer to that at the moment. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Andrew. Right, so there's evidence that an additional £4.3 million was transferred within the Department of Health and Social Care's budget to Manx Care after the 2025-2026 budget figure had already been approved by Tynwald. The original Pink Book budget approved by Tynwald allocated £357.5 million for Manx Care. But Manx Care's later operating plan showed a higher figure of £361.8 million. During a recent Public Accounts Committee hearing, former Health Minister Laurie Hooper questioned why Tynwald had approved one figure, while a larger amount, was later allocated. The Health Minister, Claire Christian, MHK, told a committee that, from her recollection, the extra funding came from within the DHSC's own budget and was transferred onto the Manx Care line afterwards. The former Manx Care chief exec, or soon-to-be former Manx Care chief exec, Teresa Cope, also said that part of the increase related to medical and dental pay settlements negotiated late in the process. Now, at this stage, there doesn't appear to be evidence that Tynwald separately voted on the specific £4.3 million transfer itself after the original budget approval, and the issue is now being examined publicly through the Public Accounts Committee process. But it seems a bit weird, doesn't it? Thanks to Ollie, who dropped a note in and just said, I listened to the programme on Monday when the DEFA minister was talking, but you didn't talk much about farming. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm in the business, Ollie said, we have limited arable land on the Isle of Man. We've got very high production costs. We're basically small-scale farming. And we've got a reliance on imported feed, fuel, fertiliser and machinery, and a difficulty attracting younger farmers. And I would have been interested to see what the DEFA minister said and how that can be resolved, because otherwise agriculture, farming, is driving down a dead end. Well, I certainly hope not. But obviously, and also Ollie said, you didn't talk about the farm support payments that have effectively declined in real terms, and that many smaller farms are struggling to remain profitable. Manx farmers are always competing against larger UK producers, says Ollie. And obviously we've got inflation, energy costs have rocketed, and we have labour shortages because people don't go into farming for the money. They go into it because it's a way of life and because they love the industry. You can earn probably twice as much as the average farm worker gets by just working in the private sector. Ollie, I can't argue with any of that, but it's a shame we didn't have your questions on Monday. But at some point in the future, Claire Barber will be back, and or any future DEFA minister will be back. And that's certainly something we there's only an hour to get in. We have to kind of race through the questions, but certainly the questions on agriculture, very, very pertinent and obviously pressing as well. Adam's with us now. Hi, Adam.
Hello, Andy. You all right today?
Very well. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, thank you, not too bad. I'm just ringing up, I'm concerned about that there's been sacrilege in Peel Cathedral, because an Isle of Man organisation, I won't say any names or name it, but an Isle of Man organisation had a party in there, a large dinner party, you know, where you've got people drinking and potentially blaspheming and things. And I think it is wrong for them to hold that in a sacred space. You know, some places are sacred, and the Isle of Man's churches and Peel Cathedral, which is the mother church of the Diocese of Isle of Man, they are sacred spaces in which generations of Manx people have worshipped. You know, it's a house of God. The cathedral is a house of God. And I think it is awful for the Church of England to allow that to happen, yeah, and for the Diocese of Isle of Man and the Bishop, Tricia Hillis, to allow that to happen. I think it is horrendous.
I saw the reports of that, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in the cathedral. It was some sort of a business organisation that had to do there, and they put tables and chairs and what have you. But presumably, they didn't just pitch up. I mean, the bishop, the Diocese of Soder and Man, would have encouraged that, Adam.
Yeah, I know, and it's happening all over the Church of England. But I mean, some things are appropriate for churches and some things are not. And if you've got people drinking, blaspheming, sinning, all the rest of it, you know, it might sound very Victorian and old-fashioned, but that is, it's a sacred space in which people worship, and people still today, a lot of people, I go to church, I'm an Anglican, I love Manx heritage. You know, my great-grandfather in the First World War. You know, there's the lists of names on the walls of the Manx men who died in the First World Wars. And so many did. You know, it's awful. You get every parish on the island, huge numbers of Manx people died. And, you know, it's a sacred space, a church and a cathedral. They are sacred spaces. And some things may be appropriate, like they have the Mars and the planet things, the planets, the large-scale planets and illuminations. The cathedrals in England, they started having light shows. And Liverpool Cathedral, Warwick Cathedral, Gloucester, all fabulous, fabulous light shows. But in some cathedrals, as in England as well, you've got things like silent disco starting to go on. You know, people taking drugs in the main bodies of the cathedral, where they've taken out all of the pews in order to make it a multifunctional space. And then you've got all these things taking place, which is what they've done in Peel, but all these events. But I mean, there's some events which are appropriate and some are not. You know, a light show may be a very spiritual thing, beautiful thing, you know, on the theme of stained glass and light and different colours. Or, for example, when they have the planets and they had, I think in St Thomas's, they had the moon. In Peel Cathedral, they had Mars and the Earth was in one of them. And those things may be very celestial and appropriate, you know, some mystic perhaps in some respects, but it's not appropriate to have dinners and, you know, dinners and huge amounts of alcohol being consumed in a church. I mean, there's a church in Liverpool that is a former Catholic church, and it's been turned into a nightclub. And you actually have people in there dancing at the altar. And I know it's been decommissioned as a church, but really I think that is totally inappropriate. And I found it, I personally, when I was at University in Liverpool, long time ago now it seems, I used to be absolutely horrified. I used to hate going in there. My friends all used to want to go in there. I hated going in there because I felt so uncomfortable with it. So uncomfortable with people dancing at the altar.
So presumably, Adam, presumably this organisation will have paid. So do you think this is all about raising some money?
Well, you know, I've always been concerned about Manx churches, and you know, I'm a bit of a busybody, Andy. So I when Peter Eagles was Bishop of Sedra Man, he was going to close down. They'd flogged the Kirk Chrysler's Eros on a 999 year lease to become a community centre, and I know it has been used recently for concerts and things, which is nice. But Peter Eagles, I think, regretted that he'd let Kirk Chrysler's Air go because it was sacrilege to the church and because he was concerned that it would get desecrated. But he was considering selling off, or there wasn't enough support for churches. I think it was Sulby the Dune and Balath, possibly, no, not Balath, Sulby the Dune. And somewhere else, I can't remember, there was one more. Oh, it was St. Olav's in Ramsey. He was considering selling off. And we were discussing what could possibly be done with them, whether they could be turned into perhaps print studios or, you know, what suitable other use there might be for them. But fortunately, he decided to keep them all on. And he told me then that it was not an issue of money. The church has plenty of money. The issue was that people were not attending them. But I think, you know, the church shouldn't be in retreats. They shouldn't be withdrawing from communities. The church buildings represent a Christian presence in the communities. And I think it is, you know, it's awful. I don't know how. I was quite enthusiastic about Patricia Hillis when she first took over as Bishop of Sedra Man. But I think, I'm not sure she's doing a terribly good job, to be honest, because she's not really engaging with the community a great deal. And for her to allow this sort of thing in the cathedral, I think really is horrendous. I know the church commissioners in the Church of England are in charge of the money. And to some extent, the Church of England is run as a business. But it shouldn't be allowed to be to the extent that they can, you know, use the churches for commercial exploitation or for prostitution is the only word that I can think of, to prostitute them to capitalist organisations. And, you know, corporate business. I think there has to be a limit. And I think the church commissioners, something needs to be looked at, because all over England, churches are closing down. It's not just in the Isle of Man. Yeah. The Church of England, all over England, and in Scotland, and the Episcopal Church, and everywhere else, the church is closing down, and the church commissioners have huge amounts of money. And why they can't release some of that money, you know, to support parish churches which are struggling, I do not understand.
Yeah. I mean, but Adam, there's nothing inherently wrong in business, is there? I mean, there's a group of Christian businessmen on the Isle of Man who meet once a week and talk about it. So, I mean, business isn't bad, surely?
No, I don't think business is bad, but it's just a question of what's suitable, isn't it? Drinking large volumes of alcohol leads to blaspheming and sin and all the rest of it. And although it may sound very old-fashioned and out of date, it is important that sacred spaces are respected.
Okay.
It's about the community having self-respect, and it's about Manx people having respect for their heritage.
Okay.
Manx people having, and other people respecting it. But if people don't have self-respect, and if the Manx don't have self-respect for our heritage, then other people won't respect it.
Okay.
So, you know, we have to draw a line. We have to say, these are our sacred spaces, and we treat them as such.
All right. Adam, we appreciate your opinion. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, 23 minutes past 12. What are your thoughts on this? There was a corporate dinner, I think it was, in Peel Cathedral recently. There was quite a bit of feature on social media about it. I just wonder what your thoughts are and what Adam said. Obviously, the Bishop of Sedra Man, the diocese, would have had to give the go-ahead, and somebody somewhere would have paid something for the hire of the place. Is it any different from that the moon and the Mars being suspended from the roof? What do you think about it? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. And John's on now. Hi, John.
Oh, good afternoon. there's been quite a lot of comment about windmills and that sort of thing and renewable energy. And there's not a lot of facts and figures around about it. I've had to raise my hat to Julian for actually, who does a lot of research for to give us factual information. Let me talk about solar panels. They seem to be a bit of a fad for them at the moment.
Okay.
The government wants to plaster them on government buildings and pay landowners and I'll notice as people putting the things on their own roofs. So a little bit of research. The World Bank a little while ago did a survey of 230 countries worldwide as to their suitability for solar power. Obviously, as a globalist organisation, they're all in favour of it. But however, in those 230 countries, right at the bottom of suitability is Ireland. Just above Ireland is the UK. And not unsurprisingly, the Isle of Man is third from the bottom. You know, we are 54 degrees north. We sit... we get Atlantic weather brings many clouds, dim light, and especially in winter a very low sun. Southern England gets about 7 hours of daylight in winter, and Scotland less than six. I consulted, there's an interesting database on the Drax power station. You know, the one that's built on a coal field, and they feed it imported North American wood, and which also gets paid hundreds of millions of pounds in subsidies to do so. The average over the winter period that you'll get out of a solar array or whatever. On average, it is about 3.5% of its rated output. Obviously, in summer, when the sun's hot and warm, you get quite a lot of power out of them. But over the year, you get about 10.5% of the rated output. So, on average. So... I mean, why would anyone have anything which is so inefficient?
What's your conclusion, John? What do you think?
They had their uses, of course, for campers and boaters and, road signs that need power and they're too far away to be hooked into the grid. I mean, they do have their uses. And I was in summer, I mean, the UK has got lots of these things. They do produce quite a lot of power. But it's once again, it's intermittent and unreliable. Our modern society needs reliable power 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
Every day and every hour of the year. And solar panels can never provide that.
Well, certainly not out of daylight hours, they can't.
No, that's right. I mean, now, where do these things come from? Generally, most of them come from China. They've got a vast industry in making these things. Glass is made in continuous high-temperature furnaces, and so is the silicon that actually form the cells. And China has about 60% coal-fired power generation, so that they probably use that for these continuous processes, which mustn't be interrupted.
Yeah.
And of course, there's many. I know we all buy Chinese stuff. But they also many reports about using forced labour in Chinese industry.
Yeah,
which of course, and of course, China is a totalitarian communist state.
But the thing is, John, this is in the climate change plan. It's in a Timwald Act. The climate change plan is supposed to, achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. So some something's got to give somewhere, and this is part of the plan.
Well, if I can say something else about all the hysteria and hype that's been generated about so-called climate change is largely came from an IPCC document. Well, a series of scenarios, computer simulations of scenarios, and the most extreme one was RCP 8.5, which assumed 12 million people on Earth, which is most people consider to be completely unlikely, and also burning more coal than there is actually recoverable. And it has now been, after 10 years, and this is used in all sorts of scaremongering and whatever. And now the IPCC has said, this is implausible. After so many people use this for all sorts of alarmist tropes, it's implausible. So when this is imposed on 2019, what was determined was taken from RCP 8.5, climate emergency and all this. So anything which used RCP 8.5 must now be revisited. And actually, this climate thing, it's almost entirely political. I mean, you set an arbitrary level at an arbitrary date without being told how much it's going to cost and how it's going to be implemented. I mean, this is absolute madness.
Okay.
And
all right.
It was brought in. Sorry?
We got a dash because there are other people queuing up behind you, but we appreciate your points
Indeed. Today.
Thanks for calling today.
Thank you. Do
call again 28 minutes before 1. Friday's Man in Line on Manx Radio.
Discover your dream home in Andreas with Kell Developments. Quality new build 2, 3 and 4 bedroom spacious homes and bungalows offering countryside living with amazing views just 5 minutes from Ramsey. With latest energy efficiency, contemporary German kitchens, bathrooms and including all flooring, you literally only have to turn the key to your new home. We're in our final phase, so don't miss out. Check our Facebook for show home opening or to arrange a visit. Kell Developments, Oatlands Road, Andreas. Island living, redefined.
Mega offers on Waltons this Saturday and Bank Holiday Monday. Mega offers on in-stock TVs. In fact, offers throughout the electrical store. Come to Waltons on Isle of Man Business Park opposite Robinson's or check out Waltons online for our latest offers. Walton's mega offers this bank holiday.
Many people are struggling. You can help by volunteering or making a donation to Isle of Man Food Bank, whether it be food or essential items or financial support. Please call 646 999, brought to you by Descon Office Interiors.
Go al fresco in style with the Lifestyle Furniture Garden and Outdoor Furniture Collection. We've handpicked a gorgeous range of luxurious lounge sets, comfy corner groups, and chic outdoor bars. And they're just perfect for those long, lazy weekends. All with free delivery island-wide. Browse online or explore our outdoor marquee. Your gardens for good living with Lifestyle Furniture. Find us at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills. Open 7 days a week.
Scrap metal coming out of your ears? Then there's only one place to call, Castaignes Scrap Metal, of course. Castaignes pay top prices for lead, brass, copper, aluminium and stainless steel, as well as ferrous metals, scrap vehicles, and they're even licensed to scrap lead acid batteries. Drop it off today or Castaignes can come and take it away. Castaignes Scrap Metal, Foxtel Road, call 801 337.
TT 2026 is almost here.
And Manx Radio Motorsport will be on the air to bring you every moment of the action.
Practice and race commentary, interviews with all the top riders, along with the latest weather and travel updates. We'll also bring you the pre-TT practice and race sessions at the Valan Circuit.
Listen at motorsport.manxradio.com, our smartphone app, DAB and AM 1368.
It all starts this Friday evening at 5 o'clock with our pre-TT coverage getting underway from 6. Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world. Brought to you by Tesco.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
It's Wednesday, Andy. It's Wednesday. Yes, I know, but the TT starts on Friday. I was reading that. And, of course, the mountain course closes Friday, this coming Friday, from 9.30 till 4.30 for setting up. So it's going to be setting up one way, that is 9.30 till 4.30. And, of course, the chaps will be at Milan as well. One for Man in Line says, a concerned fella in the north. As a Ramsey resident, I've noticed that we're not getting the regular twice-a-day shift changes at Ramsey Ambulance Station anymore. Does this mean the ambulance station is closing in Ramsey and that our cover is starting elsewhere, such as Douglas? Is this? Is this a Manx Care cut? Not heard anything about that, so the regular shift change at Ramsey isn't happening, is it? Oh, Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan.
How are you, Andy? I felt so underdressed when I bumped into you yesterday. looking smart as ever.
Well, thank you.
This is the thing about being a radio star, isn't it?
the perfect clothing for radio.
I was going to say you had the right face for radio, but I thought we'll leave that one.
Jolly really good.
Touching on yesterday and what Julian brought to the table yesterday with Robert Garden, which I found it's quite bizarre and quite interesting, isn't it? I mean, Robert Garden is actually he's actually a partner of CMS, not just working for them. The question has to be asked when someone is not doing particularly the job that they've been employed to do, who sourced this person to start with? Would this be DOI or would this be the Attorney General's office? Who sourced him to do the job, Andy?
Well, nobody knows at the moment, and the thing is, we don't know. And because a lot of this is shrouded in secrecy, and a lot of it they're saying is, you know, because it's in planning and there are commercial confidentialities, at the moment, the feeling is from some people that we're kind of on the outside of the fence trying to look in.
You could forgive people for thinking when you have someone invested into doing this who's not saying the appropriate things and asking questions, that they're put in place to actually do that and that this would be a done deal by government. And you can forgive people for thinking that, because why would a government spend a lot of money on a top law firm who's not going to look after the interests of the island in defence? Very strange. Very strange. And this guy also has his own sight on getting around planning issues as well. So, you know, I'm sure there's other, as Julian said, other companies out there who would have put up a better job for us. But this whole narrative of, as John was saying there before, this whole climate change and sustainability, and this links into what Claire Barber was saying the other day and what Ollie just mentioned before. This whole thing about saving the planet and saving the world, at the end of the day, we're not going to have any food to eat, and we're not going to have sustainability of electric in our houses because of the fluctuation of where they want to go. We're going down a route of madness. Here's a little thing for you from the other day. We had a member of a department in government who goes to a workshop and comes back and says, we've been told that we shouldn't put attachments on our emails because it damages the climate. Now, this is the nonsense that these people have got. And I'm not saying all of them, but these people are in concerning positions in government. And this is the nonsense that they're coming back with from being schooled at universities about climate change and all this here warding of it. And I think it's ridiculous. And I think we need to strip everything back and go back to some common sense and basics.
What difference do you think we can make on the Isle of Man to a global carbon footprint?
very, very little, very little. But what we will have is, we'll have, as Ollie said there, we've got farmers who are stretched to the limits at the moment, and this has got to be because of expenses and extra legislation that's put on them to farm, because farming is a pretty basic, simple thing to start with. I'm not you know, down crying it, but anyway, but it's not expensive to grow stuff. So the added expense for these people must be the legislations and the do's and don'ts and can't be's that's put in the way. And every time you talk to Claire about the subject, who is the minister, it's all about that, their little caveat at the end of, yes, sustainability and climate and all this stuff. We need to start looking to common sense issues here. And again, you know, linking into these wind turbines, and someone's going to go on about fossil fuels being corrupted. I totally agree. But this is also a globalist money-making agenda. I think the power and electricity was far more advanced many years ago and has been hidden from us, in truth be told. But I do think that we need to start working out what's best for the island and not for the big players who are sending their thoughts over through people in government.
Well, that will have to be our elected representatives and obviously the senior civil servants who will be trying to find the best way for the Isle of Man. And obviously, as you say, Tim Wald is there to look after us. Tim Wald's there to look after the people of the Isle of Man financially, obviously, to enable the economy to work for everybody and to make sure that we're safe. So, I mean, how do you suggest that the government and the civil service... Remember, the net zero orthodoxy is a global trend. It's a politically global trend. How could the Isle of Man kick against something like that? We have no leverage, Juan.
I think some of our members that are in now are conflicted about wanting to save the planet and save the world, and conflicted against looking out for the people who voted them in to do the job. And that's the first thing, is you're voted in to do a job for the people and for the Isle of Man, and not to follow these here idiotic agendas through. It's crazy. Have we got climate change? Absolutely we've got climate change. Was it our fault? Probably not. The world's been going millions of years before these people came in and started messing around, saying that it's going to end today and end tomorrow. Yeah, we've got climate change. You run with it, you adapt with it, and you change. We've had it for years. The Romans grew wines and grapes in Scotland at one time. Things change, you know, but people are very, very quick, as you said on the program before, capitalism and globalism, they're very quick to make money out of something.
Yeah.
And I just think whoever's coming in, it needs to be a consolidated group of people with a like-minded view of taking care of where we are. Mm. You don't have to kick back too much about people. It's just like, no thanks, we're not taking that on board. This is how we want to run our island. This is how we like living, and this is how we want to keep it. And I'm sure droves of people would really want to be here for what we have and what we will try and keep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Take care, Andy.
Thanks for your opinion. It's 18 minutes before one. A message in from Malcolm, who said, when people talking about saving the planet, I want to save the planet. Surely everybody wants to save the planet. It's just how you do it, isn't it? And everybody wants, sweet, clean air and clean water. Everybody wants that. But to a large extent, we've got that on the Isle of Man. So if we are going to save the planet, how much is it going to cost us? And is it going to make the Isle of Man that much better? Just 5 days to go before the 2026 TT gets underway. The man responsible for overseeing the event has been speaking to Manx Radio. Clerk of the course, Gary Thompson, is entering his 14th year in charge. And let's hear what Gary has to say in this financial climate where costs are spiralling. The TT and its challenges.
We have made some schedule changes for this year. This year, we're going Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening qualifying. The thing we have taken on board from officials, riders, teams, etc., is that it's a long 2 weeks, so everybody does get tired. We're well aware of that. We've already spoke to riders and teams, and there is I'm not going to say what the number is, but in my own head, and after discussions with the riders and teams, that everybody's generally happy with a number of laps they do in qualifying week, which they have, so we can start racing on Saturday, as we have done, we will always get those races in as much as we can. But again, you know, we're not going to put riders out in unfavourable conditions, and people need to be mindful of that.
There are plenty of residents support the TT. Some maybe don't. Some maybe see it as an inconvenience to their day. So how have you tried to argue it to maybe those on the resident side of things?
Yeah, obviously, in any sport, in any walk of life, there are going to be people who love the event, who love events, and those that don't. But the Isle of Man TT races, it is a global event. It is one of the biggest, probably if not the biggest, motorsport event in the world. Hugely popular, and what it does for the Isle of Man, it puts the Isle of Man on the map. So all I would say to the people the residents and people on the course who don't like it, is that, you know, I've been doing this job now for 14 years. We do absolutely everything we can to make those decisions, or I make those decisions as early in the day as I possibly can to minimise disruption.
The vast majority of supporters of the TT, spectators, are extremely respectful of these, but unfortunately there are those who maybe stray onto closed roads when they should. We've heard situations where drones might be flying over the course, which is, of course, illegal. How much do you have to emphasise how crucial it is that people follow the rules?
If any spectator, member of the public, is caught walking or accessing the TT course during periods of road closure or flying a drone adjacent to the course, they will be locked up. It's as simple as that. I cannot put that any plainer. There will be severe penalties imposed if they're caught on the course or flying a drone.
Well, I think he's made that clear. Severe penalties. Locked up if you go on the course or if you fly a drone above the tee. Why would you do that anyway? Surely everybody with a drone knows you shouldn't do that. Well, you heard it.
Big Red Storage in Tramode and Ronalds Way offers secure self-storage units in various sizes with ground floor options and 24/7 access. Check offers and prices using our online space calculator at bigred.im or call 640040.
Dig it, lift it, dump it, load it. When you need to just get on and do it, Gunn JCB it. Based in Spring Valley Trading Estate, they're the experts in JCB machinery sales, parts and servicing. JCB have been on the island since 1960, so their local experience and knowledge will help find the ideal equipment for your project. Just call 664-866 and ask for Matt for machine sales and Dave for parts and servicing. Gunn JCB. Just do it.
For a wide range of wood-burning stoves and a complete installation service, visit The Snug in Ramsey. And we don't stop there. Kiln-dried firewood and full aftercare service, including chimney sweeps and maintenance. Call The Snug in Ramsey.
LVW Law are a team of experienced advocates, solicitors and barristers, trained mediators and international arbitrators. Let them help you achieve the best possible outcome in your case with their wide range of legal services for businesses, corporate and private clients. You can trust the LVW Law team to fight for you every step of the way. Visit lvwlaw.com and make an appointment today. Your first 30 minutes are free. LVW Law, they're on your side.
We are number one, we are family run. Mike's Motors, Mike's Motors.
Don't let the building works fool you. Mike's Motors in Castletown is open as usual. We've got around 20 camper vans and motorhomes in stock, plus a great selection of automatic cars. So buying or selling, make Mike's Motors your number one choice. Pop in for a browse, a brew, or even a quick snooze in a motorhome.
Mike's Motors.
Open as usual at Station Garage, Castletown.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
A note in from John in Ramsey, who just said there are a lot of reasons and arguments against Eyre Stain, that's the onshore wind farm, but after taking everything into consideration, there's only one main reason to have it, and that is to help save the planet against climate change, or at least slow it down. Fossil fuels are speeding climate change. I rest my case, says John in Ramsey. And Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi, yes, talking about wind farms, and just to comment on that comment had just now. No, it's not simply about saving the planet. Eyre Stain, its first objective will be to stop prices going up quickly. No, it will be to absorb pricing shocks so that we can keep electricity at the moment at the kind of price that it is now. Once obviously then you've covered capital costs and such like, then it can actually contribute to perhaps reducing prices for electricity, you know, as part of the generation mix. But the absolute sort of day one objective of it is to stop prices going up.
Okay.
In that kind of energy shock way that our reliance on total reliance on fossil fuel for electricity generation produces.
Okay.
So that's first thing. Second thing, offshore and onshore wind. Things seem to be getting a bit muddled about this again, and one thing seems, and you know, the offshore wind and the onshore wind and the benefits and the cons of it are kind of getting confused and conflated. So I'll just reiterate again, the original plans for the offshore wind farm of Vanin, no, didn't consider the idea of taking power from it. It was about money. It was about the seabed leasing and maybe some kind of percentage deals on the amount of power generated or some such. So it was seen, and indeed if we look now, seen that actually taking power from it would mean then various rather expensive facilities which we'd have to pay for, and wouldn't perhaps make that much sense unless the Isle of Man gave up major energy independence and relied on, you know, that one interconnector,
yeah,
you know, providing lots of power through Orsted. So that would be a political decision, and I don't think anyone would want to leave the vast quantity of our electricity generation up to an outside body over which the entity didn't have any control.
I'm interested, Bonzo, is where do you think the entity is located? I mean, obviously, this offshore wind farm will be within our territorial limit. Will it be a Manx company that owns these things? I mean, surely it has to be a Manx entity because it's within our jurisdiction.
Well, as I recall, Orsted have a subsidiary.
In the Isle of Man.
Subsidiary,
right.
On the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
So it would be operated via that, but the Manx Company, of course, being a wholly owned subsidiary of the group.
And they will be the ones selling the electricity to the entity in the UK, presumably, and the ones, and this is where it gets a bit muddled, who's going to get the CFD? Who will get the money from the CFD?
Well, Orsted will get the money from the CFD.
Because in the UK?
CFD, yeah, because of course, it has previous contracts with the UK,
yeah,
under CFD. So that corporate entity can do that. But now, insofar as I understand the regulations, it would be able to, as a company, source that power which is contracted under CFD from a site in Manx waters.
Yeah. Well, that surely is a first for paying a CFD in the UK for something that's created outside the UK jurisdiction.
Well, within the... This is where we talk about the mechanisms within these contracts are different. The mechanism would be that Orsted UK was the contractor, and they're signing for contract for difference.
Yeah.
It then sources its power from a place which is adjacent,
right,
to its current wind farm. Not really an extension of it, you know, the Walney Array.
Yeah.
So yes, there are these legislative headaches about doing that.
See, I'm wondering, also, where does our leverage lie then, Bonzo?
Well, our leverage lies in the fact that there's only so much real estate space in the Irish Sea. And it makes much easier sense for Orsted to build a wind farm there than it does to other places. But let us not forget, there's a map doing the rounds on social media of Isle of Man, location of Mort Benin, and then the location of other under construction proposed wind arrays. Now you look at that, and then you see the Mona and the Morgan ones, you know, on the approaches to Liverpool. Then there's the Rhiannon one, which is off Anglesey. Then there's a block that's directly south of Chicken Rock, 10 miles, I think, 12 miles, south of Chicken Rock, whereby there's sort of planned allocation for another site, or to be, you know, another area to be auctioned in another round. Then you get into Irish waters, where you've got an array off Dublin under construction, and then there's another array which is going to be constructed just kind of on the border with Northern Ireland. No, so it's within the mountains of Mourne. So you can look from the island, and 10 years or so, you will be able to see a crescent of wind turbines. The view will have changed utterly for about 270 degrees around the island. And that view, all spoiled, etc., will be something that we will receive no compensation for and no revenue from. So, now, with that in mind, is the impact of Mort Benin, which will not probably have its 1,200-foot turbines, as I've said before, they'll cut a deal so that they can have some smaller ones, not so tall, and that gives the Isle of Man government a good look in that, oh yes, we've done something, we've exercised some control.
Okay, all right. Bonzo, we appreciate it. We've got to go.
But that view will still be...
Thank you, Bonzo, sorry. We get the picture. Not a very pretty one, but we do get the picture. Thanks for that, and thank you for your messages today on Man in Line. Lots of messages. Tomorrow we're live at Ramsey, at Lazare Road in Ramsey, with the 16-year-olds in Year 12 to hear what the voters, new time voters, are saying. Tomorrow live in Ramsey, thanks to Chris on the phones today. And enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
WINT.